If just thinking about your bills makes you feel confused and disorientated, like your head is full of raspberry jelly, then you need Monzo. Download your new favorite bank and pay bills from custom pots. Money never felt like Monzo. UK residents, T's and C's apply.
Hey, it's me, Dave Stone, former co-host of the Boogie Monster podcast. From 2016 to 2023, myself and Kyle Kinane got together each week to ramble on about ghosts, aliens, Bigfoot, and other mysteries of the universe. Or at least that was our initial intentions. But if you've listened before, you know that it usually devolved into disjointed rants about vans and fried chicken. During that time, we also ran a Patreon page that offered up exclusive bonus episodes to our patrons, usually in the form of Q&A sessions. And even though the Boogie Monster is currently on an indefinite hiatus, we're offering up those old bonus episodes to the general population so that everyone can enjoy our old nonsense. Hopefully someday soon we'll dust off our microphones and resurrect the Boogie Monster, but until then, enjoy a blast from the past from your old pals Kyle and Dave. Thanks for listening. I got higher than I've been in 4 years.
Really?
Like, whoa, what just happened? Like,
was there an activity?
No. Just Katie got me some new pre-rolls, and she's like, whatever. I'm sure there's already a name for this, but she's like a sommelier of weed. Like, she can... Mm-hmm. She knows the difference. I'm a fucking idiot. Is it strain or strand? Strands? It's a strand.
Strain.
Okay. Strain. Strain. Yeah. I know that's a dipshit mistake, but yeah, okay, strain. But she knows all that. I'm just like, it's ironic because I'm that way, obviously, with food, but like with weed, I'm just like, she's like, what did it feel like? I don't know. I got fucking high as shit. That's what it felt like. And sometimes I could tell, like an indica versus a sativa. But I'm just...
Oh, I could tell at your place that we were smoking sativa, because I never smoke sativa. And then we're like, look at this room. We got snacks over here. And we're like running around like we're on fucking coke. I'm like, oh, yeah, that was sativa.
But this shit she gave me last night, and it was a big pre-roll, and I only smoked like a quarter of it, maybe a third. I did not even get halfway down, and just... going along fine, and okay, here it comes. All right, I can tell I'm getting high. And then just out of nowhere, it just, like fucking kaleidoscope eyes, just whoa. Like, where it almost felt like I was tripping. Like, I wasn't hallucinating, I wasn't seeing things, but like, things were in 3D, and just things were floating and warbling, and I was just like, whoa. To the point where... I've been smoking weed for 20 years now, and maybe two or three times I've had like legit weed version of a bad trip, you know, with edibles or what have you.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Mm-hmm.
To where it was like, oh, I'm 5 minutes away from having a panic attack or something. Like, I was right there on the ledge.
That's, I just had to like control, like realize I cannot smoke weed like I used to.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that same thing. Like, it was just not fun.
Yeah.
And it was really panic, like, it was panic-inducing. Like, who cares if somebody calls you a pussy for not smoking weed? You have a bad time when you do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not for everyone. Same way booze isn't for everyone. But yeah, this, if anybody's interested, BIKO, B-I-K-O, BIKO, BIKO,
okay.
Lava cake, Jaseo, Jaseyo, Jaseo Diamonds. The brand is BIKO. I guess the model is Jaseo Diamonds. And yeah, man, this shit. I was like, because I smoke a lot, as you know. I've been doing a lot better with just using it as like a reward. I try not to smoke during the day much, but you know, 7-8 o'clock when I'm done with all my shit, let's experiment with my brain. See,
yeah, see how far Dave's busy. Dave's busy day.
yeah. After a long day of sitting around doing nothing.
Once I got done trying new barbecue restaurants and telling them to fuck off, I get home. I like to unwind.
But it was
it a bad trip or was it a good trip?
No, it was good, but it just came so quick and it hit me so hard that it felt like, oh, if I keep going in 10 minutes, I'm going to be curled up in a ball sweating in the corner. But my point is, like, I smoke a lot and it just felt like it felt like normally I just sit around and get buzzed on natural light, and then now I just had a whole bottle of Everclear. Like, whoa, technically the same drug, but this is so much different, more potent than what I typically do. Okay, and again, it's not like I sucked down three or four of them. I had like a quarter, maybe a third of a decent-sized pre-roll, and it just, whoa, boy.
All right.
But yeah, dog.
That's good enough. I was trying to have a smooth transition into a question.
Oh, that's okay. Oh, this is a Patreon bonus Q&A, by the way.
Well, they know they're the only ones that can get this episode.
That's true. I'm Dave. That's Kyle. You're listening to the Boogie Monster.
They know they pay $4 a month for it to get it sometimes on time.
Now, not to be confused, we're not on the radio. This is what we call a podcast. And so thanks for joining. I hope you enjoy.
Don't call in. We've never given you a phone number, and we've recorded this weeks before you're hearing it.
Oh, boy. So, Katie just surprised me with some brand new luggage right before the trip.
Ooh, let's see what's behind window number 3. Some brand new luggage. This is a new Samsonite hard shell package. You know, that is a large. That includes a duffel and a carry-on. As we were talking about before, your life is like you are permanently just on the Price is Right these days.
New luggage, new car, Hawaiian vacation.
Yeah. If you lose the showcase showdown, though, you don't get any of it.
Yeah, that's true.
If Katie surprises you with like a, now what do you think this all work is worth? And you, and there's just now all of a sudden some other guy she also married. And you both have to guess.
Oh my God. Like, why is this guy standing at a little podium with his numbers on it? I always wanted to be on that show. You know the story about our mutual acquaintance, Josh Androsky.
Yes, sir.
Man, that's funny. For those who don't know what we're talking about, he was a contestant on The Price is Right while tripping on acid, and there's video of it, and it's pretty funny.
Yeah, I think Drew Carey's like, what do you do for a living? He's like, I'm a skateboarding rabbi. And that is a story. That is like an urban legend story that we know to be true because we know him. He didn't win Price is Right. He did win $1 million on a Big Bang Theory slot machine.
$1.2 million while they were walking out of the casino to go to the airport to return home. If I heard the story correctly, he was like, hold on, let me do one more. Yeah. Let me just hit one. Like they had their luggage in hand. They were exiting the casino. Let me hit one more slot. Boom, $1.2 million.
Then spent that money running for sheriff of Los Angeles County.
Did he really?
Yeah.
I thought that was a joke.
Let's go to the boards.
Yeah. Yeah, he's very politically active. He's really into, especially on a local level, really into LA politics. But yeah, I'd heard something about that, but I thought that was like someone just being tongue in cheek. Like, oh, he's so involved in this stuff. He's running for sheriff. And I was like, oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah, let's see. Well, I'm not. Yeah, let me see. Look up sheriff. Let me see. Let me see. That was the story that I heard.
No, it tracks. I could see him doing that.
I'm not fine. Well, let's listen. Hey, this isn't about us. This is about you, the listeners' questions that want to talk to us. Mike Maskey says, Dave, any plans to record a second album? How about that next? And how about that next kitchen survival guide?
Yes to both. Not to bore people with inside baseball, but I was prepping to record an album right before COVID. And then, you know what that did to everybody. And then by the time COVID ended and I got back to touring, I lost interest in all that material. That whole hour, I was just like, because it was old at the time, you know. Like, I'd been doing it for a couple of years before COVID. It took me a couple of years to develop the new hour. Then I was prepping to record it. And then I took a year off, and then when I came back, it's like, I'm bored of this stuff. So I didn't do anything with that, and then I started working on my new hour. So my new hour is almost ready to go. So technically, I guess I've got 2 hours ready to go, but I don't know how to, like, refresh that old hour or get interested in it again. So it's just kind of sitting on the shelf.
It comes back, and for me, it came back in pieces. Like, the new one I just recorded, like, I got a bit about, like, how pillows are filthy. And it came out on some weirdo thing I had done for Pandora 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, you know what? It fits here, and I've redone it. I can put out the same joke on a hour-plus album if I want to again. Like, if you want to, you can let it work itself back in.
Yeah.
So, like, oh, this, it's not the whole hour, but you know what? This bit is fun again. And, or something in my life's happened now. Mm-hmm. Like, I used to have a whole bit about how, like, Rachel and I went to the gun range and, you know, to find out if we were going to buy a gun or not. That happened before we then did buy a gun. Now I got stories about buying a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, this is relevant to this bit here. Why not put it together? Why not glue it all together? So I think you'll find it.
Yeah, and another approach was I was thinking, well, maybe I'll just take the best, you know, 15 or 20 from that first hour and then incorporate that into the new hour. And then I'll have the 40 minutes from the old hour just sitting around if I ever want to, you know, do a B-side or something. Yeah, I don't know, or an EP. But, yeah, the COVID just really kind of fucked all that up for me. And I literally just lost interest in doing
it. Yeah, that's what happens.
And I wish I could have recorded. I mean, that's the beauty of recording stuff, as you know, is you can retire it and just be done with it. But then I'm like, well, some of this is still very good, but I'm not excited about it anymore.
I was at Lincoln Lodge this weekend when I was in Chicago, and Drew Michael was there, and he's like trying to work out his new hour. He's like, yeah, it's really more of a one man show. It's not just like 10 minutes and 10 minutes and 10 minutes all glued together.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just talking about how, like, dudes from, I was talking about how I'd go to Zany's when I first started comedy in like 2000 and watch these old road dudes come in, and how that mentality back then was you just had your act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You'd get your act. And then
Seinfeld
you did that act. I think, I forget it was Drew or was talking to Mark Geary too. It was like Seinfeld thing. It's like, no, you only need like 10% new material every year.
Mm-hmm.
And it must have been Drew, because I'm like, are you going to go to Edinburgh? Because Edinburgh, all those UK folks are coming up with a new hour every year. They do it at Edinburgh. And then that, depending on how it goes there, they get the rest of their year's work based off that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you had a great Edinburgh, the rest of your year's booked.
Yeah.
But you also are performing that show while also trying to write a new show for the next Edinburgh.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it is like a play in that sense. Like, it's got a title and people are expecting to see that show.
Yeah.
Whereas here we're like, it's always in a state of flux.
Mm-hmm.
It's always something different. It's like, oh, this joke works. Cool. Then record it and get it out of here so I can write something else that works. But I think that's why stand-up is ostensibly better now than it ever has been.
Mm-hmm.
In, well, the stand-up you haven't heard, listening audience, is better now than it ever has been. The stand-up you might find on Netflix, that's what that is. That's out there, and if you like that, no harm, no fault. But, man, there's some amazing fucking acts out there that nobody's heard of.
And the opposite is also true. I'm not going to name names right now. I'll tell you off the air. But last night I watched about 15 minutes of a guy's Netflix special, and it was some of the most generic, lukewarm horseshit I've ever seen in my life.
Well, that's why I was mentioning that what you might find on Netflix might not be. It goes against my statement of saying that we're in a heyday of stand-up. Oof. Not on Netflix, but out there performing in the bars of your city or in a weird show coming through a rock venue. You know, so anyway, let's have a positive one, Dave. It's a rough world out there right now. Let's try to have a positive one.
Stephen Murray, what is the best opening band that you did not plan on seeing? That's a great question. It's a great question.
Do you have one?
Yeah, I've got a few of those stories. Like I've said before, back in the day before comedy, I was so into live music around Atlanta. There was about a 5-year period where I literally went to a show at least once a week. Just saw all kind of stuff. But I saw, I guess off the top of my head, back in 95, 96, Atlanta folks might remember a cool little venue in Little Five Points. It's no longer there, called The Point. And it was like The Point because the building was literally like a little triangle at this weird three-way intersection, kind of like a Flatiron type building. And awesome little venue. But I went to see Orange 9mm. I don't know if people remember them, but I was into them for a small period of time. Orange 9mm, kind of that rap metal, new metal stuff back in the mid-90s. Yes. But the opening band was a band I had never heard of before called the Deftones. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, these guys are pretty good. And I was a huge Deftones fan for years after that, especially those first three albums. Just really right up my alley back then. I mean, I'm not so much into that sound anymore, but I still appreciate stuff like that. But they were, to their credit, they were one of the most, artistic and eclectic of that new metal scene. They had you just tell there was different influences going on with them than your typical just new metal crunchy band. But, I was really impressed to see Deftones. This is before their debut album even came out. And I think I had a similar experience with Korn. I think I saw Korn before they were big. I forgot who they opened for. This was at the Roxy Theater in Buckhead in Atlanta. But I remember thinking, what kind of fucking name is Korn? That was such a dumb name. With a K. That's almost as dumb as Bread. It was that 70s band just called Bread. You see them in every record store in the dollar
bin. Dave, are we not looking at the incredible potential of a mashup right now?
That's right. Cornbread, baby.
Who is this? If that isn't out there right now.
Oh, man.
Somebody with more technical proficiency and musical capabilities than us, please make Cornbread a rap rock 70s. 70s Southern rock band mashup. I got to listen to more Deftones. I know that one, as far as what everybody kind of slags on new metal type stuff, Deftones was like everybody's exception to the rule of like, the, you know, there's good in all of it. And that's still the band that had some legitimacy to it.
Yeah.
But I just didn't listen to them.
Yeah. Yeah, those first three albums really hit the spot for me back in the day.
Maybe that'll be my day. I got to wash my bikes. I got to get out in the heat, put on my short shorts and a tank top and wash my mountain bikes. And I think I'm going to do that. Maybe listen to some Deftones. Really turn on the local population.
When I used to play them on the radio at 99X in Atlanta, I would often say, new music from the Deft Ones.
You got to do the voice.
I didn't puke. I wasn't a puker, but I don't even remember my delivery, but yeah, I used to. That's funny. I don't know if I ever told you this. Like, I was writing jokes 10 years before I was a comedian, and I didn't know I was writing jokes, but just what I meant was my whole radio career, and no one really ever instructed me. Like, it wasn't expected that you be funny. But I was just like, well, I'm on the radio. Why not try to be funny?
Yeah.
And
listen to me otherwise?
Yeah. And, I used to put a lot of effort into like not jokes per se, but like, well, I mean, now looking back, they were jokes, but I wasn't writing them as jokes, but just what's a funny thing I can say about this band, or what's a funny thing I can say about this band. And that was one that I was proud of, the Deft Ones. My other go-to was, yeah.
Like my other going go-to, to college, like, oh, I want to be a writer, but I'm just writing these silly stories that I hope people laugh at.
Yeah. Yeah. Might as well.
Yeah.
Whenever I'd play a local band, I would say they're from here, so don't throw crap in their yard. That used to always get a good response during the air check session.
There was a value. I mean, I know we've talked about this, but DJs that were legitimately entertaining were few and far between.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like they were always the same kind of just bro, like, you know, like, well, we got Tracy and Amber from Heavenly Body in the studio. Whoa, girls, save it to at least past 9:30 a.m. Like,
yeah.
This sucks, dude.
Yeah, just hacks. But I was lucky to work with a few guys that were truly funny and truly, like, not just hacky, pukey DJs. There was one guy, and he worked all over, but a guy named Sean Demery, and he's dead now, unfortunately. I heard about a year or two ago he passed away from something. But he worked in Atlanta. He worked in San Francisco. Worked at a lot of big markets, but just one of the most, like, naturally, like, effortlessly funny, because even before comedy, I was aware, like, oh, he's funny, but he's not like shticky and like trying too hard, but just always had like a unique funny thing to say, but also, but not over the top, like beating you over the head with jokes, but just, you know, the music was in the forefront, but he still was kind of driving the boat and being really unique and funny and original.
Yeah, you actually didn't change the channel.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
When they were talking.
But yeah.
I'll say quickly, I saw, and if I've spoken about this before on the show, I apologize, but hey, fuck faces, we've been doing this for over 6 years. there's a band called Lifetime, and they're like this weird, they're like sort of emo, but kind of also a hardcore band out of New Jersey.
Okay.
And I went to go see Mustard Plug, which is a ska band from Michigan. And I went to the Fireside, and nobody really knew who Lifetime was. And I think it was a booking just for the sheer fact that they were passing through town, and, you know, maybe something fell out somewhere else, or this is the routing. We could put you on this show. The lineup's a bit diverse, but isn't that kind of a great thing? You ever watch four bands that sound the same, and by the time you get to the headliner that you wanted to see, you're like, well, I've just heard this three times already.
Yeah, yeah, who wants that?
And this band, Lifetime, came up, and just, I remember everybody in there, like Mustard Plug was Midwest, that was who was headlining, so you got, like, ska fans, and you know, like, we're gonna have fun, and dance around and be silly, and this band, Lifetime, came on, and everybody's like, what the fuck is happening right now? Because they have an album called Hello Bastards, and the first song on that is I remember that being the first song they played at that show, if my memory serves me correct. And just from there on out, I was like, well, I'm in to whatever this band's gonna do. They have some really drony emo stuff that doesn't get me, but when they kick into like that kind of hardcore thing, it's just, ooh, shit, it's on. And yeah, I think there's this thing with Jersey bands where they just tried to make their songs the funniest song titles in the world. Mm-hmm. Like, there's serious lyrics and everything, but I think that song was called Danurism instead of Aneurism. Beat me up, Scotty. Let me. And then the other band was, I'm going to find this. I want to find the name of it. Yeah, first one's Danurism. And then after that, I went to see, I think I was going to see Chicks Dig It, who I saw maybe a month and a half ago here in Portland, and they're still great. They are still one of my favorite bands of all time.
That's cool.
And and again, like, it's still like, I like the music, but it's also like, man, I want to have a good time. Like, I get heavy music and sincere music, but Chicks Dig It has songs about, like, called Henry Rollins Is No Fun, and it's just about how he took his mom to a music festival they were playing on, and Henry Rollins was just a real bummer backstage. not even mean, just the whole chorus is Henry Rollins Is No Fun. But so I went to go see them, and this band before them, It was at the Empty Bottle in Chicago. And so they're setting up, you know, and the lights are dim, but, you know, like show lighting. And it's a standing room with a bar in the back. And all of a sudden, they're like, they start their fog machines up. Mm-hmm. And they're just letting them run. And it's filling up the whole place to the point it's getting pretty obnoxious. Mm-hmm. And they're setting up in the darkness. So you can't see, like, what's going on. And everybody's kind of laughing because, I mean, Chicago did have enough of a sense of humor would be like, what the fuck is this? But all right, kind of hilarious. Mm-hmm. Like the time I saw Harmore Superstar with Hot Water Music and Alkaline Trio and half the audience, like, he played with his band, but then he came out in his, like, unitard singing soul jams. And half the audience is like, what the fuck is this? And the other half is like, look at how pissed off these dudes with mohawks are getting. But so this band, the Bomboras, all of a sudden, all this fog's going on. You hear a little, like, thump, thump, like, a little sound check and everything. And then they leave the stage, and then these black lights go on stage, and it's giant tiki masks, giant neon tiki masks on either side of the stage, and different things that were, like, all day glow and lit up, iridescent on stage. And then they get on the stage, and the drummer is one of the largest men I've ever seen. And I've said it before. If I see a fat guy get behind the skins, I'm paying attention.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then from there on out, they're like a surf band, but they just ripped. But they set the stage well of, like, completely smoking out the whole audience with fake fog. And then neon tiki masks, big dude ripping on some drums. And I was like, everybody there was like, ooh, you got us. All right.
Yeah.
Like when the whole crowd doesn't know him, but are like, yes, thank you. We needed this. We appreciate your effort.
That's awesome.
The opposite of that is I went and saw Captured by Robots.
Which, I don't know them.
That's the dude. He's in, I think he's also in the band Armalite, which is a really good band. And he was in, I'm blown. It's some mid-90s trivia shit that nobody else but me and a dozen other people care about. But the whole premise was that he was captured by robots and he's tied up, held hostage. And the rest of the band are all these different machines that play the music.
Mm, okay. I like that.
And it's that's like, funny. Yeah, like one of them is like the giant cymbal playing like bear from like, but he's took all the fur off of it. So it just looks like machinery. And another one is like, you know, very Tom Servo-esque with like a guitar pick on a drill that would spin against it. Very complicated machinery that this dude would build and then haul around on tour and have to set up. He's the only guy in the band, so he's got to put all his robots up there and then fake tie himself to the front of the stage.
That's crazy.
The music, so yeah,
more
the
than just a cool sucked. Name. Like that was part
oh,
of
yeah.
the act.
The music was not good.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he kind of got pretty bummed out when afterwards. And maybe, you know, again, maybe it's the show that I saw. Maybe it's one of these art projects that's always changing and he's always creating different instruments / mm-hmm. captors.
Yeah.
But I think it was at Fireside. It was just hot out and everybody's like, it's like all this that's set up and then they start and everybody just kind of like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah. Sometimes those gimmicks, you know, they have a short shelf life, but
yeah, but I like that somebody tried to do something wild, you know?
Yeah. Give them credit for that. There either is or was a band. I don't know if they're still around, but, Mack Sabbath. And I've always wanted to see them. They dress up as the McDonald's characters, and they do Sabbath covers.
Yeah, I'm on board for that.
Yeah, I'm down for
that. I'm on board for that entirely. We went to go see Mini Kiss right when I first moved to L.A. because it was all little people doing Kiss songs. We went to see them at the Viper Room, and we couldn't get in. It was sold out, and I'm like, oh, fuck. And then I remember somebody coming out or something, like, they're not even playing the instruments. They're just pretending. I'm like, oh, fuck this. Like, no, I want to see them play. But then I'm like, you think logistically,
yeah.
Not a lot of well-known little people musicians on account that instruments are made. You know, listen, yeah. I'm sure there's an ADA lawsuit there.
Yeah.
If one little person wants to start going after Fender and Gibson and whoever else makes musical instruments.
Huh. Never thought of that.
I don't know.
Never thought of that. Like, yeah. Huh.
I don't know. I mean, there's ukuleles.
I don't know why that reminds me. When I was playing baseball in high school, a joke would always be like, oh, dude, the problem is you have a left-handed bat. You need to get a right-handed bat.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that works for, like, gloves. Like, that's a legit thing.
Well,
but
no,
like,
we all understand that. Yeah. I'm Randy. Oh, you might be out of blinker fluid. That's of that ilk. Oh. Todd Griffith says, have either of you piloted a plane? That's a good question out of nowhere. Have you listened to the show, Todd? What makes you think we can fly airplanes?
Oh, my God. I barfed on a pilot of a Cessna. I barfed all over the shoes of a female pilot when I was 21 years old doing the game time traffic for Georgia Bulldog football. I told you that story, right?
Did you throw up in the middle of doing the voice of the radio voice?
No, but I did throw up 20 minutes into a 2.5 hour flight on a very hot day in a 2-seater plane, and we both had to just sit there for another 2 hours while my vomit was all over her sneakers. She was not impressed at all.
Not impressed, but also probably not shocked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, well, yeah, somebody, it's like, you know, being an Uber driver on a Friday night in a college town, like, there's going to be barf.
Yeah.
At some point in this career, there will be barf.
Yeah, I didn't barf on the air, but I was on the air 20 seconds after I barfed because they were coming to me like every 5 minutes. They'd kick it to me, and God, they gave me the cue. They gave me the cue, like, all right, you're up in 60 seconds. I was like, all right.
Let's get a little congested around the clover.
just hurled. Just Sam's fucking hot. It's August in Georgia. Small plane. Yeah. Just stewing in my puke. Sorry, lady. What was your name? Christy? How's it going?
It's still hot up there. We did I've never piloted a plane and never been in like a Cessna or anything, like a single engine thing. But we did a hot air balloon ride. And you don't realize it's still hot as shit.
Yeah.
If it's warm out, like, you think, like, oh, but the higher you get up, you're not that high. You're not at 30,000 feet.
Yeah.
You're just hot with no air circulation.
Mm. Speaking of airplanes.
Because it's not windy. It can't be windy. You wouldn't be in a hot air balloon if it's too windy.
Yeah. Did you get that video I sent you on Instagram a few days ago? Instagram message?
I don't know. What was it? What was going on?
There's a video. The account is underscore TechMech, like a mechanic, TechMech.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a point of view from the pilot. And they were descending as normal. And they were, according to the thing, it says they were at 600 feet and the engine failed. And it was a little small, I guess, you know, I don't know if it's a Cessna, but it's a small looking plane. But it's the POV from the pilot. I guess he had on, like, you know, a GoPro on his helmet or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But it's 600 feet. Apparently the engines fail. And if you put the sound on, you can hear, like, you just at the first few seconds of the video, you hear the engine and then just nothing. And then you said they don't crash. But like these pilots, I guess they figured out the technique, but they just with no engine, they landed the plane in a field, but you're right there with them from their POV, and it's pretty amazing to watch.
That was some real sweaty palms footage. Mm-hmm. I did see that. I can't imagine, like, all right, here, like, that you better, this is what you train for, this is how you handle this. Mm-hmm. Kudos to the pilot on that.
Yeah. There's a great Drive-By Truckers song called Angels and Fuselage on their third album, Southern Rock Opera. And it's that whole album is kind of loosely based around the Skynyrd legend. And it's from the point of view of one of the band members after the engines fail, and those 2 or 3 minutes of them gliding to their death. But
when did that happen? What year did that happen?
I think 77. I want to say it was 77.
Yeah.
And apparently, the plane that crashed, they had just bought that plane from Aerosmith. And they were flying from Greenville, South Carolina to Baton Rouge, mm-hmm. Louisiana, and somewhere, I think, over Mississippi.
Isn't that the kind of they nod to that in Almost Famous?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was funny when the guy, Jimmy Fallon's character, like, I hit a guy with my car. I was at Dearborn, Michigan. I don't know if he's okay. And the other guy just like, I'm gay. And then that right when he yells that, the engines come back up and the pilot's like, looks like we're going to be all right, everybody.
Oh, I can't imagine, knock on wood, as I'm about to get on a plane.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. You travel so much. Have you ever had any close calls like that? Oh, and now that I say that, I've got one queued up when you're done.
I remember going, it was 2007, I was doing the HBO Comedy Festival in Aspen. Mm-hmm. It's in the wintertime, and you would fly into Denver, you know, commercial flight to Denver, and then take not a private plane, but like a small, what, like... maybe 30 people, I don't know, mm-hmm. but like a small plane, chartered plane from Aspen to, or from Denver to Aspen. Mm-hmm. And we're up there and it's all the comics, you know, and industry and whoever. I think I remember I was sitting next to Michelle Buteau, mm-hmm. and nobody knew each other. I just had my headphones on and it got real bad. It was like, you know, winter storm and you're going over mountains and it got real bad. Like crazy turbulent, and Michelle just grabbed my hand. Like we weren't even speaking. Like, oh, you're going to the festival? Me too. One of those, like, just grabbed my hand. Mm-hmm. And I remember talking to her about this not long ago, and she said, she's like, she wasn't scared until Eric Andre was there too. We're all new faces, mm-hmm. and some people's careers took off, not mine, but some people's careers took off. But she said she didn't get scared because she knew Eric from New York, and she saw Eric make the sign of the cross. And that freaked her out.
Yeah.
Because she's like, I know he's an atheist.
And especially someone like Eric, who's also just a maniac.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't seem to take anything seriously.
Yeah, and he wasn't turned up to that level yet. But but the fact that knowing somebody's like, I don't give a shit about, you know, like, so she grabbed my hand. You hear people are just openly crying and freaking out. And I think I just put on some music of like, what are you okay dying to, man?
So you really thought for a few seconds, you really thought this is it?
It wasn't like the plane was nosediving, but it was like bouncing around so much where you kind of were really going through. Like now when I fly, like there's moments like not. I just think about like quite often of flights. Like, have you done everything you wanted to do in life? Mm-hmm. If this plane crashed, would you be proud of who you were as a person? And do you think you at least tried to accomplish all the stuff you wanted to achieve? Even if you didn't achieve it, were you at least in the pursuit of it and trying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because of that flight like that where I'm like, I put some music on and just got real introspective. And I grew up flying with, you know, my dad being in the airlines. So even mm-hmm. as a little kid, I just thought it was like a roller coaster. I didn't care.
Yeah.
But this was past that. This, like, even for me, I'm like, this is a small plane. This is not as sturdy as larger planes. And every, you know, people are crying and things are bouncing around. When you see like the flight attendants look panicked.
Yeah.
You know, and they're strapped in. And they wound up having to turn the plane back to Denver. It was too much of a storm to land.
Wow.
In Aspen. And who knows? Maybe that's, you know, par for the course for that particular flight path. Mm-hmm. But we landed and they wind up bussing us out there. But it was... It was that scared a lot of people. So that was the closest I got scared. I've been on, like, you know, planes where it's turbulent and I get excited. I'm like, hell yeah. Mm-hmm. Like me and my sister used to purposely make the crossbar on roller coasters at Six Flags like we'd push our hips forward a bit so they couldn't uh-huh. push it down all the way, just so we could float a little when it would go down the hills.
Oh, wow.
So that's where I'm coming from with that kind of thing.
Oh, man. Yeah, I just thought of this right when I asked you that question, but I think it was the first time I went to Hawaii. It was when I was shooting that documentary. Went to Hawaii twice during that documentary, and you came on the second one. We went once at the beginning of the shoot, and then like 9 months later at the very end, you came. You and Singer and Pete Holmes, they flew all you guys out there. But I think it was that first trip coming back. We're leaving Honolulu. And we're up, and we're just starting our ascent, and we're in the air for like 5 minutes, and something caught on fire. I don't know if it was the engine or what, but the pilot came on. He's like, "Listen, I know it sounds bad, but we have a fire." And they turned around, and
fortunately, we're surrounded by water right now, so the fire will be out.
But when we landed a few minutes later, they had all the fire trucks and everything out there. And the thing, when we got off, you could smell smoke. I couldn't see the fire, but you could definitely smell smoke. And
did you get to do this? You didn't do the slide, though.
No, I didn't have to do the slide, but they did hurry us off there. But and I just keep thinking, like, oh, what if that would have happened, you know, 30 minutes later? I don't know if that even matters, but it's just like, man, I'm glad that was only 5 minutes into the flight, not an hour.
But yeah, not in the middle of, 4 hours over the open sea.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the only close call. This is another question. You ever use the vomit bag?
No, I don't get motion sickness.
Yeah. Oh, boy, I don't get sick on a plane, but I do get motion sickness. You ever heard Patton Oswalt's bit about seeing somebody use the vomit bag?
No.
So funny. He just talks about how he's talking about something I've never seen before. Somebody on my flight used a vomit bag, and it was like the guy sitting next to him, and he just tells a story about how casually the guy did it.
Yeah.
Like how smoothly he opened it. Like he was a real kind of prim and proper gentleman, and he just grabs the bag, and he said he like snapped it open like with one hand. And he does this act out where he's like, and he puts it up to his mouth and forms a tight seal around his mouth, and then you just hear me. Like this weird look. And then he closes the bag, he wipes his mouth, he puts the napkin into the bag, seals it up, and puts it back in the seat back. And I've never seen anybody A, use a vomit bag before, and B, that casually.
being dapper while it's all going down. Have you ever seen somebody get, have you ever been on a plane where somebody got kicked off?
No.
That happened, one time it was close. These two ladies were just trying to fight, and I think they calmed down. But then I got the good headphones. I'm like, this is worthwhile investment. The good sound canceling headphones.
Yep.
Because honestly, whatever else goes on, I don't hear babies crying anymore. So I'm sitting there. I might have talked about this on the show. It was maybe a couple months ago. It was after a pandemic and everything. And I'm watching, people are turning around. I'm like, who gives a shit, guys? The one dude that's in front of me is oh so casually trying to use his turned off phone as a mirror. Like, he's just holding his phone with a black screen to look backwards. Like, just turn around and gawk if you're going to go through that much effort. But then, you know, I love a little drama. So I take my headphones off, and there's just some bickering. And they're going back and forth, and I flight attendants are like, all right, you're gone. Like, I guess the woman was hitting her own husband.
Really?
It wasn't as dramatic. Like, I'm sure somebody put it on a TikTok somewhere. But they just yep, sorry, you're gone. You're out of here. I'm like, oh, good for you. Let's not, like, this is before we took off. You shouldn't have to, I'm going to make everybody put up with this bullshit.
That's anyway, nuts.
Yeah, I realize it's a much less exciting story than. Like, and then nothing happened and she got off.
Oh, man. People in airports.
I want to read this one. Ryan Lawrence says, got married last Saturday, the 11th. Congratulations, Ryan. Said, mother-son dance was to the Monster Mash. Hell yes, dude. That is the kind. That's, you're doing it right. That's how you have fun. He says, anyway, give me some marriage advice, Boogie Monster style. I think we need marriage advice from you if your mother's Sundance was Monster Mash.
That's pretty great.
I think you're doing it. I don't have any, as I am not married. But
one thing I've really tried to adhere to in the last 6 months that I've been married, and this is not an original premise, but it's a good one. Somebody told me, and I'd heard this said before, but beyond just the cliche of the phrase, to literally try to adhere to, don't sweat the small stuff. Mm-hmm. And what I mean is, you know, I'm a stubborn bastard, and you know, and I've talked about how Katie and I have had our ups and downs in the past. Just we met each other at weird times in our lives. She, you know, enjoyed a little too much wine, and I was living in a van and had all kind of issues with that. And we've since righted that ship. But my point is, with her in the past and with other relationships in the past, because I'm so stubborn, it was just, I was more concerned with winning the argument or being right or proving her wrong. And now it's like, hey, you've both decided to make this commitment. Who gives a fuck? Whatever you're arguing. We talk a lot about just like the cardinal sins. I was like, you know, as long as nobody cheats on anybody, as long as there's no physical or emotional abuse, pretty much everything else, we can fucking work through this shit, you know? So I don't know if I'm doing a good job at it. You'd have to ask her, but I really do try to make an effort of like, hey, who gives a fuck if I'm right, if she's wrong? I mean, you know, there's still on a smaller level, there's still, you know, some concern with that on, you know, more mundane level. But in terms of big picture, like, fucking let's both just get over it. Let's not pick your battles. Pick your battles. And I guess when you're dating someone and, you know, you're still uncertain of your future together, you know, maybe you're more concerned with, like, establishing your personality and your values and your principles. But, like, at this point, like, we've decided to be married. We've decided to live the rest of our lives together. On these little bitty, petty bickerings, just fucking shut the fuck up and don't argue about that stuff. And know that we both have good intentions. You know, we're not trying to bring up the past and old resentments and old whatevers. It's like, no, we're on each other's side. We're on the same team. Let's not argue about petty bullshit the way maybe we did 5, 6, 7 years ago.
This is not necessarily relationship advice, but I've had to realize like, wait, am I angry or am I just hungry?
True that.
Because I'll get up and just start, like, I'll get out of the house if I get errands to do. Like, I'll eat a late lunch. It's like, but I didn't eat any breakfast. Now I'm getting shitty. I got a shitty attitude about this or that. It's like, am I really mad about this small thing that we got going on here? Is it like, hold on, make some food, then see how you feel about it. It's like, oh, it's more. I mean, I know that's the whole premise of that Snickers ad campaign. Mm-hmm. It's true. Sometimes, I don't have, I don't get up and just eat breakfast right away and then tackle the day. I'm just jacked up on caffeine until 3 p.m. being like, well, what the fuck is this? It's like, well, it's that you need to eat lunch is what it is, Kyle.
Mm-hmm. Another quick piece of advice would be invest in some square footage.
Oh, man.
It's tough being in a relationship when you live in a studio apartment. Invest in a second or third bedroom. Get you a garage. Get you somewhere where you can go and get away from each other. Not just during arguments, but just in general. Like, in life. That's why I'm so smitten with my record room / office. Like, it's just nice to, not that like, you know, not to go too far the other way, like, oh, I got to get away from her. But no, just to be able to have a little elbow room.
No, you don't have to be in each other's same. Yeah, like, yeah, you can think that love will conquer anything until you're just stewing in each other's shit smell. Because you can't escape it.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's a big one, is having a place of your own within the place of your own.
Yeah. Yeah, that's huge. That's huge, man. I shared a wasn't a studio, but I think I had about 450 square feet, one bedroom, with a gal 20 years ago, and oh boy, that combined with the fact that I was 22 and just a fucking idiot, but like, oh man, just so many problems, and just so many nights of just feeling helpless of like, well, fuck, either I just go. And I would do that. I would just go walk. Like, I'm getting the fuck out of here. Knowing that you've got somewhere to go within your own home, like you just said. But, like, knowing that I don't have to just go sit in my car, go walk in the park to get a little space from her, you know?
Yeah. I can't imagine. At least I have. Did you have your own room growing up?
Yes. Yeah. I was lucky to have that. I mean, I was, like, 6 or 7, I think. I remember being really small, and we had bunk beds, my brother and I. But, yeah, I think after like first or second grade, I remember getting my own room.
Yeah, I wonder how much that, like, how that affects your upbringing without realizing it. It's like not having personal space ever.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how people with huge families, how you deal with that. Like, people have, you hear those stories of like, oh, I'm one of 9 kids and... We had a 3-bedroom house, and there was 4 kids to our room.
Yeah, you go past 3 kids, that's environmental terrorism as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, that's nuts. That's nuts.
I'll get bitter about that one.
Sloppy noodle.
I was just about to say sloppy noodle.
That's a good one. Either you guys have any reoccurring dreams or dream characters? I'll let you go first, buddy.
I don't have it anymore, but I would get this anxiety dream where I was always like stuck on a perch, like I climbed up a tower or something and then can't get down.
Interesting.
Or like a roof or anything. I was at some extreme height and couldn't get down. And so basically it's like having a panic attack, but in your sleep.
Yeah. Oof.
And it was one of those, like, wake up just sweaty and fearful kind of dreams. Hmm. Like, you're so, like, one of those, like, you're so relieved it's a dream. Like, I never had nightmares that I can remember that it was, like, a monster or something chasing me. But that was the nightmare I'd have. It was always, I don't know how I got up there, but, like, a radio tower, you know, you can climb up those, but for some reason the ladder broke and I couldn't get down or something.
Mm.
So, go ahead, decipher that one.
I've had a good reoccurring dream for about 25 years. About once a year, I'll have this reoccurring dream of me playing in a pickup basketball game, and I'm just dominating, and it's so fun. And I know you're not an athlete, but there's in high school we'd play a lot of pickup basketball, and it was so fun. We'd play before school, like the gym would be open at like 7 a.m homeroom would start at 8 a.m and anybody want to show up, you know, at 7, you could just play pickup basketball. But we'd play like full court pickup, like 5-on-5. And I was a good basketball player in high school. But one of my favorite things, I was a point guard, and I really enjoyed passing over scoring. I was a good scorer. I could shoot well, and I could handle the ball and stuff. But I loved being like the passing guy. I loved just, you know. And in these reoccurring dreams, and they started in high school based off of those real pickup games. But they feel like, and that's another thing, like with dreams. Did I hear correctly somewhere that like, You had this long dream, but in real life, it took like 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Something like that. I don't know how that worked. That's crazy. That's crazy. But in this dream.
Yeah, I don't understand how the timing works.
Yeah. It comes about once a year, and it feels like the dream lasts like 30 minutes. You know, it feels like almost like I'm playing a full game, and I'm just dominating. I'm just making all these passes, and I'm not winded. My cardio's perfect, and I'm just running up and down the court and stealing the ball and behind the back and dishing it to this guy, and everybody's high-fiving like, man, Stone's on point today. And it's just such a fun, like, fuck yeah, man, I'm really good at something. Like, and I don't know why. It just comes back about once a year. And I'm like, yeah, fucking basketball dream.
I can only think of Chevy Chase and Fletch. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen Fletch?
Yes, yes.
Remember when he just thinks he's playing for the Lakers? Probably not a scene that could make it into in today's lands, but he's just got the Afro wig on and he's playing for the Lakers.
Oh, man.
How do you look in your dream?
I don't remember. I can't remember, like, if I'm wearing a uniform. I don't remember my clothes. But I do remember being Dave Stone. I do remember being me, mm-hmm. and not, like, you know, it was me, but I had Abraham Lincoln's face. Or, you know, I know it's me, and I don't know any of the guys in my dream, but there's like, usually, like, nine other dudes, and they're just playing a pickup basketball, just up and down the court, just – every pass is perfect. Every shot goes in. And it's always like, man, this is fucking fun. Way to go, Dave. So that one comes about once a year. Now, when I was a kid, I had reoccurring dreams. This one reoccurring dream, and I don't even know how to explain it. I tried to explain this to Katie one time. I was really young. I remember being like 3, 4. And it felt like about once a week for about a year period. Who knows? It could have happened twice. But looking back, it felt like I had this particular dream about at least a dozen times. And I don't know how to describe it. But I'm just like in – I'm like in a – imagine being like in an aquarium – like at the zoo or at an aquarium. Like, imagine being like in a big fish tank.
Sure.
But I'm not a fish, but I'm just kind of floating. I'm just kind of drifting and floating in water. And I've since not concluded, but hypothesized, does this have something to do with in utero?
I've since concluded, not concluded, but hypothesized. God damn it, Dave.
I don't know if this is like an in utero thing. Am I having like some weird flashback of being in the womb? But I'm in like a enclosed body of water, and I'm just kind of floating around. And
is there other stuff in there?
Yes, there's. They're not people, and they're not animals, but I'm not alone. And it's sinister. It's dark and gloomy and cloudy and scary. I remember, and I don't know if that was just me being a little child and just bad dreams are scary, but there wasn't anything you could point to. There wasn't like, oh, there's a monster, there's a grizzly bear coming to get me. But it was just, I'm floating in like this swimming pool, but it's enclosed like a fish tank or an aquarium, and there's just other entities or spirits or beings in there with me, and they're also just kind of floating around, and there was
Are you in a pot of your own chili?
Maybe that's what it is.
What if, like, this is like a food fetish? But not like, boy, I sure like eating, but like, dude, the whole scalding the balls and then dreaming about you swimming in some stew? I think you love food so much you want to be food.
But this was not happy. Like, it was, and it's nothing I could even if I could articulate at 3 years old, there's nothing I could point to. Like I said, I wasn't being chased by an animal.
You were like that young, huh?
Yeah, I was real young. I remember being like 3 or 4. And I have, and that's a whole nother can of worms, but I have like early memories. I can remember stuff that like happened when I was like 2 or 3.
Really? I can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe, I tell this story.
But the in utero thing might not be that far off if that's
Yeah.
Well, like, shit. Now we're getting into weird territory because if you think that babies can have dreams, then where does that stand to
with our current
feelings towards what an unborn child's rights are?
Yeah.
I'm not touching that one, man. Remember, good vibes, lighthearted today.
Yeah. But, yeah, I remember I would have that. It felt like once a month for a year or so. And but there was just such a heavy darkness to it of like, I don't know what this is, but this is bad. Mm-hmm. This is like doom. And I remember waking up thinking like, what the fuck? Like, and I, as a kid, I had traditional nightmares of monsters and boogeymen and blah, blah, blah. But this was like, nah, this ain't that. This is just something weird and looming and sinister. And I'm just kind of floating around in this weird environment. It's fucking weird.
That does sound strange and creepy. And I've got no answer for you on that one. The in utero thing is a wild idea.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, who knows? Dreams, all that's so fucking weird, man.
They wild dog. Them dreams wild dog.
Fucking crazy.
Let's cap it on something fun, huh?
Okay. You want that last one there? That's a pretty decent one.
From Spicy Sweet Chili Doritos?
Yeah, that's a fun one.
Is this actual product placement on our own Patreon?
I don't know. He's been a patron for a while.
Somebody's got fun Dorito flavors weighing in?
Oh, that'd be funny. If, like, corporations had, like, social media representatives that joined Patreons and stuff.
I mean, if they went that far, they already do that.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, man, listen, Dave, if we're getting big enough that we're hitting that spicy, sweet chili Dorito tip, maybe this podcast is more popular than we thought.
Spicy Sweet Chili Doritos asks, what's your favorite board game? Are you a board game guy?
No. And it's one of those things that I bet once I sat down to get into it, I would have fun.
Mm-hmm.
But it's never appealing initially to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I played for like a couple few times with my buddies, but playing Risk.
Now, but which one? I remember that game, but what was the point of that one?
It's, you know, you got a map of the world and it's, you know, world domination. You got to, it was a matter of rolling dice. It was, I guess, you know what? I don't know anything about D&D. Never played it. Don't know anything about it. I played a game similar to it. Andrew Orvidal, our pal Andrew Orvidal, has a board game podcast and has designed some of his own board games.
Really? I didn't know that. I knew Grant Lyon. Or, I don't know if you know Grant, but he's designed board games. But I didn't know Andrew did that.
Yeah, Andrew does that too. And I wonder if, like... Yeah, if like you roll dice, I don't even remember how to play Risk. And the whole point is we'd all get together and get stoned, and then we'd all be so stoned, nobody would remember how to play halfway through the game.
Mm.
That's how every game ended.
Hmm.
But I think you roll dice to get more like this type of soldier, that kind of weaponry, and the stronger those elements are in your little country or region dictates how many dice rolls you get against the next country or region.
Okay.
It's like, oh, I only got one soldier and one cannon. Oh, you only get to roll a dice twice versus I got five and five. Oh, you get to roll a dice 10 times.
Okay.
And so you have more opportunities to dominate. So, and there's some strategy to it though. It's because you're looking at the board, the world is the world. And you're like, oh, this person's weak over here. So I'm going to move my soldiers to this country to either attack or like defend because that person's strong and they're coming over here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, being like a Monopoly game in the sense, not like the gameplay was the same, but that it was frustrating and you'd get mad at each other.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
But I don't know. We were talking about playing. Rachel and I were talking about playing it again, but we didn't get around to it.
My favorite game as a kid was Candyland. was like, sure. Candy? I'm on board.
How many of the pieces did you eat before your parents yelled at you?
Dave, those aren't gummy bears.
It's not real, Dave. It's not real candy. Well, what are we playing for?
Stale. I used to play the shit out of Candyland. Dude, Candyland did a lot of chutes and ladders.
Chutes and ladders, sure.
Did a lot of that. Hungry, Hungry Hippos. That's not really a board game per se, but
it was interactive. Did you get into any adult board games at all? You were never like a Trivial Pursuit guy or Monopoly guy?
Yeah. I liked Trivial Pursuit back in the day. I enjoyed. I know a lot of people. It was trendy, and then people got burnt out on Cards Against Humanity. I played that for a while. I thought that was fun.
We played that, with Rachel's brother and sister-in-law and his teenage son, which I was like, this is a wild choice. Mm-hmm. And it was fun to watch him like come up with things and be so terrified. And we're like, well, you have permission. We're allowing you to play this game. And then having to say what the horrible things are.
I played Cards Against Humanity. Stuff.
Yeah. I played Cards Against Humanity with Sean Patton and his family.
Uh-huh.
I was in New Orleans for 1 year. And his mother, like, Sean doesn't sound like that. He can kick into the accent whatever he wants, but he doesn't sound like he's from New Orleans. But his parents do. You just say something horrible, and his mother would just be like, "Oh Lord,
oh Lord,"
just dismayed by everything that came out of everybody's mouth. It was pretty sweet.
Oh Lord,
oh Lord.
Oh man, you know what I was looking for the other day in Target. I'd love to get a hold of a really premium yo-yo. I want a really good yo-yo. I was in a big yo-yo phase in like 6th and 7th grade, and we had, was it Yo-Mega? Like the one that you could, it was transparent, you could see all the gears and stuff inside, and the ones that would sleep. And I got good. Well, I could do a lot of little tricks.
Yo-yos don't have gears.
Well, this one did, yeah. The Yo-Mega, it was clear, and you could see some gears and mechanical stuff on the inside. And
I got to look at them.
It had something, there was something different than just your average like Dunkin' yo-yo, because these would sleep. You'd whip it down, and it would stay down for 10 seconds or something, and then you could pop it back.
Oh, it's a smart yo-yo.
Yeah. I'd love to get a hold of one of those again. That's a fun
one. Oh, these do look like it's got something.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, have you looked up some like yo-yo videos online? Or what?
No, kids are doing. They're doing all kinds of crazy shit. But I could walk the dog, and I could do the. There was one thing I forgot where like you fold the strings around, and then it's like a pendulum going in and out of the little hole that you created. I used to do that a lot, and man, I really enjoyed it. It was a fun little hand-eye coordination dexterity thing.
I was following some extreme pogo sticking accounts on Instagram. I bet there's some about yo-yos. I guarantee you there's some. I saw one kid do it. Somebody's called the trick was just a double helix, and he somehow managed to get the string to twirl in a way that it looked like a DNA strand.
Wow.
Well, the yo-yo part itself stayed still.
Huh.
Yeah, buddy. Oh, there's some content out there for you to consume. I can think of no better time for you to get a new yo-yo than right before you go to Hawaii. Just you, swim trunks, open Hawaiian shirt, relearning yo-yo on the beach.
Done. There will be videos.
Showing up to everybody who's like, oh, we have 9 a.m. yoga. And you roll up like, oh, I misheard. Anyway, mind if I stand around here, ladies? And then you just bust it out. You throw a few over the tops at them.
Around the world, that was one.
Maybe an around the world.
And then you land it. You got to land it back on the string, and then you do the back and forth like your knead and dough type of thing.
Dude, that these kendamas. People got into these kendamas a bunch.
I don't know that one.
It look it up. It's hard. It looks like a hammer. It's got a ball attached to a string, and basically you twirl the ball around in the string, but then you land it on each sides of the hammer, and there's a spike on the top of it, and if you could land it in the little spike. There's a hole on the ball. It's there's a world of content out there for you to consume over on these things, Dave.
Become a yo-yo guy again. Speaking of,
I like,
real quick,
I like
pogo
it.
Sticks.
I like
did you it. Ever have a pogo stick?
We did. Me and my sister got into it.
Me too. It was as if I was gifted a Corvette. It was like, what the fuck? Oh, shit. I have access to a pogo stick? Game on.
Well, I had a hair up my ass a few months ago. I was just like, oh, I wonder if like pogo sticking is like, maybe I might have seen one clip. But people have like extreme like gas piston pogo sticks.
Jesus.
And they're doing crazy shit.
I bet.
And we would do. What was my big trick was, you know, you'd bounce on a pogo stick and then I'd do a cross up. So I'd take my feet up, cross my hands, land back on the feet part and bounce with my hands crossed and then put it back.
Okay.
No footers, one footers, I think we got some no handers in there sometimes. You got to like grab the pogo stick between your legs. You got to get high enough to do that and let go real quick.
Damn.
Yeah, we loved it.
Love shit like that, man.
And then the rubber bottom of it kind of wore out, so it was just like a pipe. And I think we just started punching holes in the vinyl flooring in the basement. And I think my parents weren't too happy about that.
Yeah. Oh man, good times.
Good times, baby.
Thank you, patrons. If we didn't get to you this month, we will get to you soon. We're gonna try to get this whole batch done eventually.
Hey,
good questions.
Good questions means we get to go off on a tangent.
Yeah, man. Conversation starters.
Also, still good questions. Chaz Grigo says, what's your favorite color cat? Right now it's orange because Little D's orange. So that's my favorite cat, ergo my favorite color cat. That's the answer.
Don't tell Harvey and Truman. I've always loved and wanted a Russian blue.
Oh, they're beautiful animals.
So beautiful. Wanted a Russian blue cat. One day.
I just found a breed of cat that I never knew existed. Rex cat.
What's that?
R-E-X. I don't know. It's got a weird little face and like a curly hair.
You follow the Twitter account, I think it's just Death Metal Cats or Black Metal Cats or something like that.
No, but I will right now.
It's they take just beautiful pictures of these like really exotic looking cats, and then they make them caption something, you know, very metal and doom and gloom. But I don't know what kind of cats, but there's I guess a lot of them are in Europe or the Nordic countries, but
like
big and feral looking, but also like different facial features. And some of those
followed
are
as of right now, followed
beautiful, badass, gnarly cats.
Yeah, this is great. This is the best content recommendation I've had in a long time. So thanks, Dave.
Yep. Yeah, it's good. Fucking love cats, man. Love cats.
Yep. They're the best. I'm going to hang up and I'm going to go pet mine now.
You send Little D our love.
Hey, back at the critters over there. I hope Singer takes good care of him.
Yeah, I'm sure he will. All right, buddy. You hold down the fort. I'm going to go waste away in Margaritaville.
I think they have like one that. There. Yeah, I think there is a very ill-placed Margaritaville somewhere on Maui. Get you a yo-yo, buddy.
I will.
Catch you a yo-yo. I think you'd dig it.
Thank you, patrons. Holler at you next month. Holler at you next.
Thanks, y'all. Peace. We'll be right back.
Okay, thank you.